What's more important, hormones or mindset?
Oh, okay. I want to cheat and say both. But if I had to pick, given all the data, I would say hormones, because they are, if you are a candidate, they are a key component to longevity, because they protect bone, brain, and heart, and treat the head-to-toe symptoms, and they affect mental health and mindset.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Purpose Pivot, a Market Scale podcast with your host, me, Melissa Gonzalez. Today, I'm really excited about the conversation I get to have with one of the contributors of my new book coming out soon, Dr. Somi Javed. She is somebody that, if you don't know, you're going to want to continue to follow after this conversation. She is not only a board certified OBGYN, but she is also the founder of HerMD, which is a comprehensive women's health practice revolutionizing the future of women's health care. And if you're following conversations online about sexual health and menopause, I am sure you've heard some sound bites for her. But for now, we're going to dig in deeper on some of those sound bites, some of her knowledge, and seeing what new information you can start to bring into your life. So Dr. Somi, thank you so much for being with us
today. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I was so excited when Jane Hansen officially connected us when I was working on my book, and you shared so many tidbits, which we can't tell all of them because they have to buy the book to read it. But I'm excited to touch upon, there's so much that we can cover. So I'm excited to get into this conversation with you. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm sure if people haven't seen you on social media, they've seen you in Forbes, maybe it was one of Jane's columns, or Vogue, or Well and Good, In Style, etc. I mean, you really have become a go-to source for information on these topics. But let's dig into that a little bit, because you've been called a revolutionary woman in women's health. What first inspired you to pivot your career to founding HerMD and also making sexual wellness and menopause central to your mission?
Well, I went into women's healthcare because I nearly lost my mother when she was only 45 years old. And that was my aha moment that women needed an advocate. She had left arm pain, shortness of breath, and chest pain. I was 21, pre-med, Northwestern at the time. And the doctors told her it was caffeine, that her children were stressing her out. And I was like, no way. And so she ended up having emergent surgery, nearly died. And that was my aha moment that I went into women's healthcare. Fast forward, and I'm seeing 50 patients a day, and they're coming to me talking about their cancer, about their libido, lack of orgasm, survivorship, hot flashes, word finding. And how can you do that, do an exam in 5 minutes? You can't. And
so, no.
For me, listening to patients, advocating for them, hearing their stories, were truly the impetus to open the first HerMD.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that when you talk about what can you find out in 5 minutes, the other thing is, a lot of the times when we go to our visit, we're checking the box. We're going to that one routine visit, and then whatever we do ends up being reactionary. And there's not enough proactive care that we give ourselves.
And I think that women are so used to being shut down that they've given up. So to tease out that information that's already sensitive or stigma or taboo, or maybe she had a bad experience in the past, takes even more time. And then also, frankly, takes expertise that the majority of OBGYNs were not given.
Which is wild to me, you know, like the more and more I've been digging into this, the more I'm at that time of my life that I'm in perimenopause. And I think about, you know, my mom didn't even know what that was to educate me on it. And now you're seeing all this dialogue online, and it's mind blowing how much we still don't know.
No, you know, I spent 12 years between when you count undergrad, medical school, and residency to become a women's health expert. And we spent the majority of our training really focusing on the reproductive years. And I'm not saying that's not important. I'm a woman who went through infertility myself. But if you look at the grand scheme of thing in our lifespan, it's a very short amount of time that we're in those fertile years, right? And trying to, if we want to, have children. But yet the majority of our training is focused there and not on the 40% of our life that we will spend in perimenopause and menopause learning about bone health and brain health and sexual health and cardiovascular health, you know, the number one killer of women. That's how my mother almost died. And so for me, it was listening to the stories, feeling like an absolute failure, practicing doorknob medicine. We've all been there, right? Where you're trying to talk to the doctor and you're like, one more thing, one more thing, one more thing. And they're like running out the door because I had nurses knocking on the door saying eight on deck, meaning you have eight more, you know, patients to see. And so I was like, there has to be a better way for both providers and patients to have an optimal experience where you become partners in your healthcare so that you can have a curated outcome and you can feel very comfortable talking about these taboo topics.
No, absolutely. And also stop thinking them as taboo. Because it's everyday life, right? It's everyday life. And I feel like the more I've become comfortable talking about it, the more I also resonate with others and we have this commonality and we can talk about it and get advice from each other. So I think it's so great that you've really leaned into this and are helping others be able to have the conversation. You also, in your pivot, left kind of a traditional medicine approach to build something innovative. So tell us, you know, how did you get to a place where you found the information you need and then your approach to be able to bring that to others?
This is where I really encourage people, if you're going to have imposter syndrome, you know, that's where you need to clear that out of your head. You know, it shouldn't be why me. You know, I put up something yesterday that Obama said, you know, when you finally get to these tables and you sit down, you realize the people around you are not much smarter. But I leaned on friends and colleagues and people who had started practices, people who were in business, people who were insurance specialists, people who had started businesses. And I just, you know, I am a forever teacher. You know, as you mentioned, I'm in the New York, I'm in the documentary about menopause. I'm in two New York Times bestsellers about menopause. So I am an expert, but I wasn't born an expert. You have to humble yourself and you have to forever be a student before you can be a teacher. And so I leaned on my network of people and I learned and I observed and I went and got preceptorship and really gained that knowledge and expertise, and then literally could not find. I went to hospital systems and I said, hey, I have this great business plan. I have this idea. There's this unmet need. Women need this kind of care. No, 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 it's impossible. It'll never work. And then finally went to my husband and I said, I'm either going to stay home and raise these beautiful babies that we went through infertility to get, or I'm going to do this. And he's like, good God, woman, you will drive us all bananas if you try to stay home. And honestly, and a wing and a prayer and a plan and a business plan, I took out a small business loan, cashed in my 401k, bought a building, opened a practice, thought it would be a really nice place for women of Cincinnati, Ohio to come to. A couple of years later, we are entertaining women from 35 states and three countries. And so two other female co-founders who had never been asked about their sexual health, who were like, this is crazy. 200 women. This is before the menopause gold rush, before, you know, Naomi Watts and Stacey London and Tamsin are all in the space. 200 women are showing up in Cincinnati, Ohio to hang out after hours with their gynecologic team. They're like, you're onto something. Women deserve this. And so we need to scale. And so we decided to go into fundraising, which they also told us was impossible for three minority women from the Midwest. And, in less than 5 weeks, we had raised $10 million to really start growing the brand and the mission and the care.
That's incredible. Well, congrats on all of this because this is no easy feat. And I love that you brought up sexual wellness. Some of the things that you talk about also is people just associate that with intimacy. And I think there's such a larger conversation that you're helping to mystify that it signifies so much else in our lives. So can you talk a little bit about that too?
Oh, yeah. So first of all, for physicians and providers, we learned that sexual health is treating an STI or a, infection, helping someone get pregnant or preventing pregnancy. And those are all core key components of our sexual health, but no one talks about libido, desire, pain, arousal, moisture, or even women's satisfaction. And if you look at the FDA, and how many approved drugs there are between the genders, there's never a more glaring disparity than there is in sexual health care. Men have over 20 solutions for sexual health, and women have two. And the first one was FDA approved in 2015. And so when we talk about sexual wellness, and we talk about all those domains of sexuality, we want to know about your libido, we want to know about your satisfaction, we want to know about your arousal. Sexual health is a barometer. It's a barometer of your overall health. And the example I give to people is think about it. When you're ill, whether it's a short-term illness or a long-term illness, you're usually not having sex. It's like a vital sign. And so I, use that in my practice a lot. And then sexual health affects our confidence, affects our mental health, affects our relationships, and it affects what's going on at work. People who are wanting to be intimate, right? Because there are people, people call me and they say, well, what about people who are asexual or choose? I'm talking about people who are wanting to have sex and are happy with their sex lives. They do better at work. They have more confidence. They have healthier pelvic floors. Their vital signs are improved. And so sexual health is way beyond what goes on in the bedroom. In fact, I gave a talk about how what it goes on in the bedroom affects what goes on in the boardroom. And it's very, very true.
Well, you also talk about dopamine, and in my book I talk through exploration with experts like you, what releases in our body when we're under stress, when we're happy, when we're not, and all of that. And so when you talk about a dopamine fix or moment, sexual wellness and health sit right next to that. So, and you call it the sweet spot. So can you talk a little bit about that
Yeah, for
too?
sure. So, one of the best questions I love asking, aside from does anyone know any of the names of the female sexual drugs, is what is your biggest sexual organ? And usually the number one answer is vagina. And then closely followed by the clitoris that no doctor, learns about. And I think that was one of the best New York Times articles that came out recently with Dr. Rachel Rubin talking about, the clitoris and how it's the only organ dedicated to pleasure, and yet no one knows about it. But truly, our biggest sexual organ is our brain, and it allows us to feel touch. It allows us to feel pleasure. It allows us to be present and focus on pleasure. And it also allows us to feel pleasure. And so there's this euphoria with these release of neurotransmitters like dopamine. And if there's disruptions in those signals, either because of an underlying medical condition, a side effect of a medication, then there can be impaired issues with orgasm, with arousal, with desire. And so I want the take-home message to be that your brain is your biggest sexual organ, and neurotransmitters are a key component of that satisfaction and that feel good. That scene from When Harry Met Sally, when she's
Yes,
that infamous
the
scene, and everyone's like, I want that, or I'll have what she's having. It's because of that release. There is actually an orgasm dysfunction. There's people that have lack of or delayed orgasm or muted orgasm because of pelvic floor issues. There's also something called an anhedonic orgasm, because there's two parts to an orgasm. There's the physical contractions of both the external and internal anatomy for women, but there's also that euphoria. And so there are people, because of disruptions in the brain, whatever, peripheral central nervous system neurotransmitters, that will have the contractions. So there's no problem with blood flow or sensation there, but they don't have the euphoria. And so that's why dopamine and neurotransmitters are so key to our sexual function.
I love the way you broke that down, because I think we all know it as you talk about it, but you don't think about those things. And not everybody's comfortable with that, and not everybody kind of embraces it in the same way. How do you and your practice work with individuals, either those who kind of put a stigma next to sexual wellness, or through the aging process, where quite frankly, for women, it gets a little less comfortable? And how do you help them navigate that?
Yeah, so the number one thing we did is we decided that no matter what you were coming in for, age appropriate, that we would ask about your sexual health. And that way people weren't like, why is she asking me? Does she think something wrong with me? Even if you're coming in for birth control, we're going to ask you about your sexual health and beyond, are you sexually active and how many partners and, the basic form. That's number one. So if you come in, it's part of the normal process. Number two was really helping people understand their bodies, their anatomy, and understanding and giving names to issues that they may be having, like low libido. Sometimes women would self-blame and be like, I really love him or her, or I don't understand, I'm broken, something's wrong with me, I don't deserve, this pleasure or this partner. And so what we call that is the biopsychosocial approach to sexual health care, meaning it's your hormones, it's your medical issues, it's your own biases towards sexual health. Like, do you feel deserving? Do you feel there's something dirty? Are you thinking that sex is just for procreation? I mean, I've seen people from all walks of life. And then what is going on with your life? Are you a young mom? Are you super stressed out at work? Are you struggling financially? Are you caring for an elder parent? Are there, integral problems in the relationship? I've had women come to me and say, hey, I want you to prescribe me testosterone, or I want you to prescribe me Addy or Vyleesi, one of the two FDA approved medications. But when you really dig deep, they're having pelvic floor issues or horrific pain, or maybe they just don't really like their partner right now. And so I tell them, these things aren't love potion number nine. We have to address the biology, the psychology, and the social issues in addition to the pharmacotherapy and the hormones.
Absolutely. And I love that you're doing that work because I do think that there's a disconnect in that. And it's so easy to self-loathe and, blame yourself and have these stigmas tied to it. And I think it's not only important for women to get it, but in order to have the conversations with their partners, those real conversations about what's happening, so they can kind of navigate it together and lessen the shame that they might be
And a
having around that.
little trick that I love for partners is now femtech innovations have come up with apps. So there are audio erotica like Dipsy, there's written erotica like Rosie. There's a great company called Aria where you fill out a questionnaire with your partner and they send you sexual health tools. So notice I don't call them toys. And when you're talking about vibrators at major medical conferences and the impact on sexual health and the pelvic floor, I don't think they should be called toys. I think that's why we don't take things seriously when we talk about women's sexual health. A lot of patients will say, Dr. Gervais, that took the pressure off. Like, having an object or having something fun to do made the conversation less awkward. So you also bring in counseling or maybe pelvic floor physical therapy, and you take those, like you said, those awkward or formerly taboo conversations, and you make them a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, well, one of the things you talk about is embracing vulnerability. And I think that's a big aspect to it. And it's something I talk about in my book, how dynamic leaders embrace vulnerability. There's such strength that comes out of that, though. And I think a lot of people associate vulnerability with weakness. But when you embrace it, like you're guiding people to do, this new strength comes out. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, you've talked a little bit about how you've had the conversations and really repositioning it as tools versus toys. But how do you get people to embrace vulnerability?
I think, I tell them that the more vulnerable they are and the more honest they are, not only with me, but with their partners, they will get the outcomes, that they are seeking to have that comfortable, fun, sex should be fun, sex life, and even their outcomes with their health. And one of the best stories, I think that I've ever heard on stage was when I was with Naomi Watts, and here she is, an actress, not wanting to admit she's in menopause. And she tells the story publicly. She's with her now her husband Billy Crudup, and she's in the bathroom trying to take off her menopause patch, right? Because she doesn't want him to know that she's in menopause. He finally like knocks on the door. He's like, "What is going on?" And she's like, "I didn't want to tell you I'm in menopause." And they ended up having a laugh about it because his mind was like, she's not into this. Like, what's going on? You know, and he, you know, gently reminded her that he's getting older too. And I think she said that that broke the ice. And I think that there is something very, very sexy about being confident, about being transparent, and honestly about embracing your new body, your new mind, your new sense of self. I talked to a lot of women at first as they're going through menopause, and they keep thinking about the way they were in their 20s, their body, their libido, and they get to this point, and we know this in our brain, a lot of women, your empathy centers increase and your centers of basically, I don't give a F anymore, also increase, you know? And so you're just like, you know, you come to this beautiful place of acceptance and empowerment. And that is a very beautiful thing. And partners of women will say that confidence is supremely sexy. And so when you're comfortable in your own body, you're able to obtain pleasure because you can teach your partner what is pleasurable and what is not.
No, it's so true. It's so true. And I think if we look at it that way, you know, this is going to enable us to be more confident, to have those conversations and therefore improve my sex life. That's such an empowering mindset to have as a whole. You know, we're lucky to have you here talking on this podcast, but you've been featured on TEDx and Female Founders, major media, like I mentioned in the beginning. And I feel like you're just getting started. Like you've had this for a few years, you raised $10 million, you have this amazing online network. I just have two questions. One, it's progressive also that you have this online platform for it, you know? So how do you approach that in a way that still feels very personal and intimate? And then my second question is, you know, what's the message that you hope to leave, you know, as your legacy for women in health and well-being?
So I wrap everything into firm core pillars of my belief, which are education and storytelling, because storytelling resounds, you know, deeply with all of us. And if you wrap things in education, they don't sound as scary. They don't sound like porn. So that's how I approach my social platforms, whether it's my LinkedIn, my social media, my podcast called The Disruptor. I want everyone to know they're not alone. As far as my legacy goes, I want there to be no shame in healthcare for women. Vagina is not a dirty word. But the bottom line is I want to leave healthcare a little bit better than the mess, the complete mess, tragic mess that I found it in.
I think that's amazing. And again, no easy feat, but I love that it's becoming such a, you know, every time I see a new voice come out about it, it's like,
you know, slowly we're breaking down those barriers, which I think is really, really, really important. I know that we could go on for this conversation. I feel like there's so much to touch upon, but I'm going to ask you some rapid fire questions too, if that's okay.
Oh, let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. Number one, what's more important, hormones or mindset?
Oh, okay. I want to cheat and say both. But if I had to pick, given all the data, I would say hormones, because they are, if you are a candidate, they are a key component to longevity, because they protect bone, brain, and heart and treat the head to toe symptoms, and they affect mental health and mindset.
Yeah, no, you get away with that one. And I agree. And longevity is such a key term, I think, that we're talking about now. Okay, if dopamine is the sweet spot, what's one everyday activity outside the bedroom that boosts it?
Oh, I'd say exercise. And in whatever shape, form, whether it's lifting, whether it's walking, whether it's playing pickleball, I would say that the foodie in me would say a favorite bite of your amazing, whatever you love. I have a piece of chocolate.
For me, it's chocolate.
I was going to say a piece of chocolate every single day, but something that brings you intense pleasure.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Fill in the blank. Desire is.
I want to say desire is everything. Desire is longing. Desire is life. Because for me, desire is not just about sex. It's about success. It's about love. It's about, you know, just that lust and zest for life that people have. So to me, desire is everything.
I love that. And you glow as you say it, which I think is so beautiful. But I talk about, you know, the more we understand the things that energize us, the more we can lean into what you're saying, right? And that you just, I feel like talking about it, I saw the dopamine fix happening, which which we want to have more in our life if we can.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I know we were just like, you know, just the tip of the iceberg and the conversations with you, but I'm so excited to be able to further introduce you to the audience. And how can people continue to follow you after this conversation?
Absolutely. So I am on Instagram and LinkedIn, Somi Javed MD. My company is also on LinkedIn and Instagram, HerMD, drsomi.com, HerMD.com. And I am usually on a stage somewhere at all times. And yes, up to date, I have now raised $40 million. So that's today.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. And as menopause takes more and more of a front stage, I am featured both in Tamsin Fadal's book on How to Menopause and Naomi Watts' book, Dare I Say It, both amazing resources. And if you haven't checked it out yet, The M Factor, the movie, because now the prequel is coming out next year on perimenopause. So you can find me in all of those places.
Yes. Well, I'm definitely going to watch the prequel, and so honored that you're in my book as well, The Purpose Pivot. So thank you so much for that. Again, everybody, this is Dr. Somi. So continue to follow her. So many words of wisdom. And I hope that we all really can lean into this path of more dopamine fixes and sexual health and wellness. So thank you so much.
Thank you.